Hello, Patsy.
Hi.
Welcome. I will just introduce you first and then we'll start a conversation about presence and leadership. Patsy Rodenberg is head of voice at the Guildhall School of Music and Drama and has been for the last 30 years or more. She's also a renowned theatre director and acting coach. She has worked with some of the best known actors in British theatre, as well as some of the biggest names in film and television. Her books include Presence, The Need for Words, The Right to Speak, and Shakespeare Speaking. Patsy has a deep knowledge of Shakespeare and classic theatre from the Greeks to modern classics. This combination of voice, presence, and text is what she brings to the world of leadership, and it's what I want to discuss with you today.
Fantastic.
So can I start, Patsy, with asking you about the idea of presence and what presence is?
Well, I think the good news is that we're all born present. There's a wonderful joke in theatre that you should never act with a dog or a child because they're fully present. And if the actor isn't present, you're more interested in the dog than the actor. It's a place of absolute attention, curiosity. It's a place when we're interested in something outside ourselves. Obviously, when we're fully present, we survive. When we're fully present, we see each other's humanity. The best conversations happen with both people in presence. An actor draws an audience into presence by being fully present. And at some stage of my career, in fact, probably 37 years ago, I became very obsessed about teaching presence because I was working with teachers who would say things like this: that person hasn't got it and that person has. And I became very obsessed with the idea that everyone has the it factor, the presence factor. And over many years, I've been developing something called the three circles of energy. Full presence is what I call second circle. And it's absolutely to do with me being interested in a point of focus outside myself. And because my work is very practical, you can see people fully present because they're often, when they're standing forward on the balls of their feet, their breath is low. It's a physical manifestation as well as an intellectual, emotional one. But in second circle, we are involved with something. Most of us have had the experience of hearing a noise at night, and immediately we become fully present.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where we're born, that's how we're born, and because of life being what it is today, a lot of us lose it. Out of interest, a lot of people in less developed societies still have presence, but that's another issue. So the three circles of energy, second circle is full presence. First circle people tend to keep energy inside themselves, they're imploding, so they're, when they speak, they're often speaking to themselves, you know, so they're sort of back there. And there's no risk in it.
Mm.
There's no risk when we're in first circle.
You're protected.
Yes. First circle people are often maybe great listeners, but they don't communicate outward.
Mm-hmm.
In second circle, there's a two-way street. There is an energy being shared,
mm-hmm.
and in that way, no one in that relationship is, they're equal.
Yeah.
So first circle people, you can see it in their bodies, they're often collapsed,
mm-hmm.
their spine is collapsed, their head is looking down. It looks casual.
Yeah.
It looks
uninvolved,
exactly.
And could you relate that to being introverted or?
You can. I think the more I do this work, the more complex it becomes. I'm giving a very simple view of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people who can manipulate passive-aggressively are first circle, but actually can use energy differently. This is all about energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to talk about the breath in a moment, but
yeah.
It's all about breath. So the first circle person looks like a victim, doesn't have authority, really. So on the other side of second, of course, is third circle, and a lot of people, I used to call third circle bluff, because third circle people, their energy explodes. You know, those people who come too close, they often speak too loudly.
Mm-hmm.
They speak, but they don't necessarily listen.
Or connect.
Or connect. I would suggest at this stage of my work that both first and third circle, in the body, the breath, there's a you're desensitized.
Mm-hmm.
You're not picking up things. In second circle, you're open and you can pick things up. You can see signs, you know, that exactly why we need to be in second circle if we want to survive.
Mm.
We have to pick up signs. So if first circle is implosion and third circle is explosion,
mm-hmm.
and again, in a third circle person, you can see it in their body, often they have that puffed up chest, or they're braced, or they're very held.
Mm.
And controlling in a way,
yes.
Very controlling. So you see a lot of bad acting in third circle.
Mm-hmm.
You have an actor just telling an audience what they should think and feel rather than entering a dialogue with an audience.
And you don't get a sense of their connection with the material.
They're not connected.
Okay.
They can be very effective. You
mm-hmm.
can win an Oscar in third circle.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you get a humanity. The great actors, and most of the great actors I work with, are in second circle. They lead the company in second circle. It's how you build a team, an ensemble, we call it in theatre. But everybody has to be in second circle.
So do you think for medical leaders, for medical doctors, for instance, who are in leadership, that it's hard to be open, isn't it, to all the suffering of other people?
It's very hard. It's very easy to close down.
Mm.
I think if we make the journey of that every child is born in second circle, at some point you're closed down, and it can be a variety, of course, of reasons. But I imagine that if you're dealing with very difficult things, it's easy to either close down into first or brace yourself,
mm-hmm.
shield yourself in third.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that chest is often a shield.
Mm.
You know, those two loud voices, shields, command and control.
Mm.
But
probably a very good doctor is in second.
I think it's critical, because I think you're missing signs when you're in second circle, you're with somebody, and maybe if you're with, by the way, these energies are very contagious. If you're in third circle, everyone around you will probably go into third circle or first if they're
mm-hmm.
frightened of that energy.
Mm.
In second, there is this exchange whereby if you can maintain as a leader, any actor will tell you that as they go out, often the audience is not settled, they've had a gin and tonic. The only way to bring them to attention and to a readiness and a being in the moment with an actor is to stay in second circle.
It's a big challenge, isn't
it?
It's
a huge challenge. But it's the challenge, actually. Shakespeare talks about it, to be or not to be. That is the question. It is the question.
Mm.
And at that moment, Hamlet is talking about whether he wants to be present with his own grief and betrayal. That is the question.
Mm. Rather than cutting off from it.
Yes. So what all these great plays tell us is that presence and being in the moment, every actor knows that being fully present. You see, when you're in first circle, it's almost as though you're attached to the past somewhere. In third circle, you're almost trying for the future. You know, my image
mm-hmm.
of you're at a drinks party and somebody's in third circle. In fact, they're looking beyond you to find
mm-hmm.
somebody in the future that's more interesting than you are.
Yeah. And probably thinking about themselves.
Yes.
Not about you.
Right. So this second circle, in terms of a healer,
mm.
you have to be present.
Mm.
I think it used to be called a bedside manner.
Mm.
I think, and I think that as the world gets more complicated and you have to work with technology, you often see people more connected to technology than the human being.
Because the technology comes in between.
Yes.
So this has huge implications really for both leadership and the practice of medicine.
Without doubt. I don't know how you lead in a humane way unless you're in second circle. Here's the obvious example. A great leader notices everybody. They walk down the hall. It's a wonderful moment if your leader notices you in second circle.
Mm.
You feel great. you talk to the receptionist, you talk to the cleaner, and that's what community is as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't have that second circle connection, we don't have community. But I think it's...
So how does hierarchy then... Because hierarchy must... is very present, isn't it, in all organisations and very much in medicine. And so community overrides hierarchy in a way, or flattens it.
Well, I have to be optimistic and think, and I have seen it happen in organisations that are very structured, that the leader does break down those barriers. And in a way, when you're in second circle with somebody, you know them.
Mm-hmm.
You meet them differently. In fact, when I do basic exercises with people and they get into second, and of course the body has to be involved in the breath, and you become open and you are connected to somebody else's energy, people feel known and they see each other. I mean, I've had people who have known each other for 20 years who've actually never seen each other,
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
second circle.
Mm-hmm. Or met each other,
right.
Really.
Met,
yes.
A real meeting.
Yes.
I always say that if you meet somebody in second circle, every meeting is unique. I mean, the obvious example again is, you know, a child comes home from school, you have to be in second circle with
mm-hmm.
them, and then you realise that something's happened in the sand pit at school or
mm-hmm.
whatever. And that exchange is the human exchange. It's what we all want.
Yeah, but you need time for that, don't you?
Well, not if you know how to do it. You can switch it on. You can deliberately make sure that you leave that room and you're in second.
Mm.
But I think it has a bigger implication, apart from the leadership implication, which of course is enormous, is that you can notice things differently.
Mm.
A lot of people in second circle, their curiosity and their attention, of course, accelerates.
Mm.
You can notice changes, and I suppose if you're wanting to be healed, part of what you want to know is that you have been seen and are known.
Yes.
That we have that connection.
Mm. I was working with a leader who was previously an intensive care nurse, and I was struck by her ability to pick up signs and signals and atmospheres in a big room full of people. And I asked her afterwards how she could tell what was going on in the room. And she said that that's what I learned in my training. So, in a way...
To be really heightened...
Heightened attention.
Second circle.
Yes.
And every circle has different levels of energy within it. You can be quite gentle in second, or you can become very connected. So,
mm-hmm.
of course, in under duress, it goes up naturally. If you're followed home at night by somebody with malice aforethought, your presence has to go up. I was working in prisons, worked a lot in prisons, but I was working with a man who was a rapist, you know, and a terrible taxi driver. And he said, silly girls, they got into my cab drunk, listening to their music. Easy. So I asked him, I said to him, would you have attacked them if they were fully present? He said, oh no. Because you don't attack people
mm.
who are present, or you're less likely to.
Yes.
But it's so that's the darker side. The lighter side is that we engage differently in second.
But I suppose if the girls were in second circle, if the girls were aware, they would feel danger.
Yes.
But
and they probably would have got into the cab
yes.
in the first place.
Yes. So it strikes me that it's a two-way thing.
It's a two-way thing. It's absolutely.
Yeah.
I had a great martial artist teacher when I was very young, and he used to say, don't trust anyone who tells you how to survive. The only way is to be fully present. But that's a human place in us.
And how do you do it? How would you train yourself, because it sounds like it's actually very physical.
It is physical.
As well as...
There's some really cheap tricks, you know, because the good news is that it is a known place for us all. So I often, if I'm working with somebody, I'll ask them if they're a good sports person. And sometimes they'll say yes, and they then understand that hitting a backhand well, you have to be fully present, and it's about the body and the breath. And I can transfer it into their life. So it's about where the body is. You see, all over the planet, I would suggest, authority and, in a strange way, decency is the same, has the same body language, I would suggest.
Yes, so a lot of people would say authority is third circle.
Well, it isn't, because A, it's weak. If you talk to the SAS, those puffed up, built up blokes, if you go into a room, they're the first ones you take out, because all their energy is up in their chest and they're puffing themselves up. But our power is in the breath, which is in the power in the lower abdominal area connected to the breath. And what we do in theatre, and it sort of applies to anybody I work with, is that we start to ask somebody to be centred. We ask them to stand in an aligned way, and when we're centred, we're efficient and our movement has economy. So you start with the feet on the floor, the feet are under the hips, the knees aren't locked, your energy is slightly forward on the balls of the feet, your spine is up. If you slump your spine, you pull yourself into first circle. If you puff up your chest, you push yourself into third. Third circle is actually force. I'm interested in power.
Okay. Very different things.
Very different thing. So if you get somebody centered, they're balanced, their shoulders are released, their head is well balanced, and everything is open. And if you get into that position and you feel the floor and you rock, you come back to center. It's a very simple thing. And the other great trick, that if you get somebody walking with energy around a space and you ask them to stop, they immediately stop with their feet on the floor, fully present. Now, what you have to train somebody to do is that they have a default position. Either they brace themselves into third to block out the world in a way,
mm-hmm.
or they slump back into first. But when we're fully in second circle and centered, and our breath is low, we communicate authority. But it's decent authority.
Yes.
It's a human.
Yes. It's not force.
And we own it. Shakespeare talks about great leaders owning their faces. They are the lords and owners of their faces. You know, clean. I talk about power being clean.
That demands a level of self-awareness, doesn't it?
Of course it does. Of course it does. And it's a hard journey. I'm not suggesting it's easy. Mind you, some people, maybe it's their upbringing, they don't lose their presence.
Mm-hmm.
They have it, they haven't lost mm-hmm. that natural engagement. And curiosity. Second circle, if you think about it, is something outside yourself.
Mm.
And when you speak in second circle, your words touch.
Mm.
They
so
touch
it's
someone.
It's open.
It's open and it's touching somebody. Third circle people often push their voices and the voice bashes you.
Mm.
It feels like you're being hit over the head with a baseball bat. First circle are often mumbling and you can't really hear them.
So neither of those sound like the person doing it is interested in what's going on around them.
No, they're either disengaging or trying to push somebody away.
Okay.
That's why the image of a two-way street is very important.
And you often talk about ethical use of power and the link between words and what you say and your power. And I think we were talking about good authority, and authority which recognises people and sees people.
Well, I think you have to face that if you are a leader and you have authority, everything you say is going to be listened to differently. You maybe cannot go. I talk a great deal about informality is very dangerous. Now, I don't mean being formal in a pompous way, but everything matters. There's nothing, but that's the same as a great play. There's not a random word in a great play.
Mm.
Everything you say, somebody's going to listen to very carefully. So you have to choose your language very carefully.
What about jargon? And because a lot of business people talk, and of course a lot of medical professionals talk in a language that is specific to them. Does that stand in the way?
Well, that's a shortcut for their... You need jargon. Mm. You can't fulfil certain tasks. But if somebody doesn't understand that language, then you have to find words that they will understand. Otherwise, you're excluding them. And they feel small. They feel... It's the same in any household. If you go into a family and the code of language is that something you can't crack, you feel an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're trying to heal somebody, you don't want to exclude them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you do, that's a conscious choice. But if you're just using jargon, not realizing they don't understand, but it's very clear if somebody doesn't understand you, if you're in second circle, you can see that they're confused.
But you can sound important if you've got...
You can sound important. You can feel that by using that language, you can't be challenged.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is absolutely the case. I was just talking to my students about it the other day, and they were laughing about if they go to the bar and they don't like one of the other students, they will deliberately talk about something that student can't talk about.
So it's a form of aggression, really?
Yes.
To lock somebody out?
Yes. Now, I completely honour that with very complex tasks you do need jargon,
yes.
But it's about being aware of somebody enough to know whether they're understanding you or whether you have to use different language. And what the Greeks said is that if I say something fully, it exists. So that's why you need to choose your words very carefully,
mm-hmm.
particularly if somebody is vulnerable, particularly if you have authority over them.
Mm. Or if you're speaking in public to an audience that doesn't share your background, like in the media.
Absolutely. I mean,
so
if you want to
say
you
have to be very, very careful in preparing and choosing your words and be aware of your role, because a lot of what you've been talking about is you have a different role with your colleagues than you have with your patient.
Yes.
You have a different role with your staff than you have with your patients.
And it can be seamless, but you just have to be very aware of what you want to achieve and whether you want to engage somebody or not. Now, I think occasionally you might decide not to engage because that's
mm-hmm.
the best thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like everything in education, it's just about choice. But if you really want to have an impact, you have to be in your body, on your breath, in second circle, and you have to choose words that will have a real impact on that person. And if you're using words that they don't understand, then they're just going to switch off.
And you and I have worked together quite a bit over the last 3 or 4 years with leaders in business, all kinds, including the NHS. And I'm often struck by how much you emphasise preparation and thinking about what you want to say and how you want to say it.
Well, you can't prepare silently if you're using your voice. The voice and speech muscles perform a very intricate physical task. To speak well in public is athletic. So on one level, there's lots of levels involved in why you have to prepare out aloud. One is that you're actually telling the muscles what they have to do. And so many people believe that because they're very bright, intellectually bright, that they don't need to do the visceral, sensual thing of using their body and their breath and their voice and warming those areas up in order to be effective. So on one level, you have to prepare and warm up. But on another level, you don't know really what you think or what you feel until you speak it out aloud. And so many people I know write out a speech, but the written is not the spoken. And if you just write out something and speak that, it will always sound off-putting.
So you have to write it again for the spoken word?
You have to, I would suggest that you have to write it speaking. so that it's in your voice. And then when you hear yourself say certain things, you know that that's not the right way to say it.
Mm-hmm. So you would advise people to, if it's something important, to say it out loud first.
Yes, and prepare it. Really prepare it. The trouble is, with a lot of the people that we work with, they're very, very bright.
Mm-hmm.
And their brains are superb on many levels.
Mm.
So they're a bit, they think that doing some physical activity is below them in a strange way. And yet as soon as they do some physical activity and practice out aloud, they notice that they're much more effective.
You mean walking around a room or breathing?
And speaking.
But it's embarrassing, isn't it?
Well, it isn't. It's your tool, and if you're a communicator, that's what you have to do. You have to. There was a program on the radio the other day. It's so obvious to me that it's very useful for us to learn things out aloud, because we then experiment with language and structures of language, but we also work our voices. And so it's very important. But I think that you understand something better when you speak it out aloud.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people will know the feeling that you're reading a paragraph in a book and you don't understand. You go back and you mouth it.
Mm-hmm.
And the physicality in the mouth is helping you understand what you're really saying.
Yeah.
What you're really saying.
So it's as if words have a physical presence. Or
yes, they do.
Physical,
I think,
texture.
They do. We all know that. We know that things have been said to us, probably in second circle, that are embedded into our bodies. I don't go with this idea that sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can never hurt you, because they do.
Mm-hmm.
But if people are vulnerable, they're going to listen to everything you say, and everything matters. And if you have, I mean, one feels for people who have to go in and give bad news. That has to be practiced.
And this must be an everyday occurrence.
It's an, even if you walk along a corridor, getting fully present and going through what you have to say to somebody, at least you have a chance to edit out anything that is not appropriate. And that's decent, you know.
The more, you don't need to do it with somebody else, can you do it with?
You could do it on your own.
You
can do it in the shower in the morning.
Right.
I had a very difficult meeting yesterday. I knew it was going to be hard, but before I went in there, I went into my office and it's not going to come out as verbatim, but I'm practicing the ideas.
Yes.
Out aloud.
Yes.
I'm practicing.
And they change.
And they change. And you find the most decent way of saying it. The more I do this work, I think that second circle is just about good manners. A good host is in second circle.
Courteous.
Courteous.
Thoughtful, I guess.
Thoughtful. Interested. Observing. Curious. What's happening in the space. All these things. And some professions require it in a very essential way. No actor is going to move an audience unless they're fully in second circle and clear. But then, if you're a doctor, just being with somebody in second circle and talking to them will make them feel better.
So it's compassionate.
It's compassionate. Mm-hmm. Without any doubt, it's compassionate. I was so relieved that when my mother was dying that the night nurses, I slept with her every night. One of the night nurses was so in second with her and really spoke to her, not at her.
Mm-hmm.
And when she was on duty, I could sleep because I knew somebody was being present with my mother. Was with her.
Mm.
When we're in second circle, we're not alone.
Mm.
In first circle, you see it often in restaurants, don't you?
Yes.
Couples sitting there in first circle and you're alone. And at certain moments in life, we don't want to be alone.
No, especially when you want to be together.
Yes. So I'll always remember that woman coming in and speaking to her, being with her. You can touch in second circle. You can have physical connections as well as vocal connections, and second, of course, it's everything that we do.
So in relation to leading people, I think you believe, as I do, that communication is vitally important, both emails and reports and meetings with staff, and that there's so much communication in leadership.
Absolutely. But it's not just communication that is in first or third. I often think that when you receive one of those rude emails, the person sending it might not be actually knowing that they're rude, but they've been writing an email in first or third. You've got to write to someone, and that can change the way you write something very, very clearly.
So if you mindlessly write an email, you could end up being very offensive.
Yes. Or not having the impact that you want. Got to think very carefully. Leadership is lonely. And it's hard.
I understand it's lonely because I meet leaders all the time who feel cut off from the people they lead.
Well, I think you can be connected but still lonely. I don't think you necessarily have to be cut off. I mean, a lead actor will go round at the half and go into the dressing room of every actor and just have a connection with them, so that when they're out on stage, they've got a connection. But I think the responsibility...
So you have to build those connections.
Absolutely.
Before you need them, in a way.
Every day of your life.
Right.
I often coach people that... You see, technique is often only for the moments when you're not happy or comfortable. People always say to me, Patsy, when I'm happy, everything's fine.
Yes.
So often, I just get people to look at all the people they don't like dealing with, because they're probably the ones that are not going to be in second circle. So you might have to think, I don't like this particular person. I find them incredibly annoying.
Mm.
But that's the moment you have to stay in second deliberately and get into the room in second with them.
So fear of an audience, of standing up in public, it's quite challenging, isn't it, to stand up in public and speak or be interviewed on TV? Or
it's very hard, and of course it's harder for non-actors.
Mm-hmm.
On one level, actors are practicing that adrenaline every night. They're dealing with the fear. They know how to deal with it, mostly through breath. But they have somebody else's language.
Yeah.
They're moving towards owning somebody else's language.
And in a way, that's safer.
It's much safer. It's much safer. Because it can be you and it isn't you. There's a paradox there. But when you have people speaking from themselves, that is as raw as it gets. Whenever I work with non-actors, I feel so profoundly moved by their issues, because an actor knows how to prepare and prepares. They're craftspeople. This is a craft based on repetition. But they're not speaking from themselves. In fact, a lot of actors are very shy. They don't want to be interviewed, really.
They don't want to be themselves.
No. So that's another issue.
Yes.
But if you have very important things to say in the media, and you know it's going to be controversial, you've got to do a huge amount of work on it. A huge amount.
And a lot of the people that we deal with, as you say, are experts and know a lot about a subject, but they're talking to audiences that don't know all of those things. So there's an added challenge of explaining very complex things in simple language, or in language that conveys a specific point.
Be as direct and as simple as you can be. And then people that are very bright often forget to say the most obvious things. They just go on and on. I mean, I was working with somebody the other day, and everyone says about him, well, he just rambles. Fantastic amount of data and statistics. But we don't learn through data and statistics. We learn through stories, and maybe I'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. But he's boring everybody. And I said, look, what are the four things you have to say? in the most direct way. And he got very angry with me because he wants to embellish. And I said, but you can say, I'm going to give a very small overview of this issue. You can ask me any question. You know, if you know your stuff, you don't have to ramble, because you could actually say the simplest thing, which is ask me questions.
Yeah.
Ask me questions. Get a dialogue going. Even if it's a presentation to 2,000 people, you should still think of it as second circle dialogue. That in fact there's the possibility that you will enter dialogue. Like a great actor with soliloquy, it's a dialogue with the audience. It's not a one-way street.
Right. And you can't tell them everything at once.
You can't tell them, and you have to humanize your information. The great leaders that I know are brilliant at telling really important stories, because that's how we learn. We dream in stories. That's how we learn.
But if you were to give advice, we're coming to the end of what we can say. We could go on for a very long time.
Yes, we could.
What would you say would be, what would the advice be?
Notice people. Be interested in them. Try and stay open in your body. Don't look at people. Bring your head up, release your shoulders. Practice out aloud. Practice. Humanize people. My rule in life is, anyone that's looking after me, I'd like to humanize. So when I get into a cab, I always chat to the driver, because if they know who you are and you stay in second circle with them, they'll drive better for you.
Mm-hmm.
Equally, if you're one of those parties when they're bringing around champagne and bits to eat, if you talk to the waiter and you find out their name, they'll get more champagne your way. It's as simple as that. But it's a survival position, but it's also a human position of being in a connected space with somebody.
Yes. Thank you very much, Patsy.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much for listening. You have an opportunity to talk to Patsy at a webinar on the 3rd of November between 6 and 7 p.m. So log in if you want to talk, and also we will give you links to Patsy's work and to my work if you want that. So thank you very much for listening.